It's Monday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, voters in Iowa hear last-minute appeals from U.S. presidential candidates. Iran remains the big topic for lawmakers in Washington.
I felt like there was always this other side of myself that I had never quite explored or got in touch with.
We meet a poet torn between two cultures. Also ahead, Rihanna has new music for you. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. At campaign rallies across Iowa, some candidates and voters are angrily blaming Washington, D.C. for the nation's problems. Voters concerned by the growing influence of big money and entrenched politicians appeared to be supporting three anti-establishment candidates: businessman Donald Trump, Senator Ted Cruz, and Senator Bernie Sanders, much more than expected in the polls. The statewide Iowa caucuses on Monday evening mark the first step for candidates who hope to end up in Washington, the place that they've decided and derided throughout the campaign. We're joined by VOA's Catherine Gibson in Des Moines, Iowa, as the candidates make their last-minute appeals to voters.
I was at a Donald Trump event at Drake University in Des Moines on Thursday. It was freezing cold here in Des Moines, and the people were wrapped around the block. And some of them told me that they had been waiting since 2 o'clock that afternoon, which would mean they had been in line for over 4 hours. And they didn't get into the auditorium for at least another hour or two. So there are definitely some dedicated candidate supporters out here.
It sounds like the voters in Iowa are very interested in this particular race, especially because it's the first one and because we have such really dynamic candidates involved.
They absolutely are. You know, every voter that I've spoken to has really displayed a sense of curiosity and interest in the whole process. No one has ever said to me, oh, I'm so tired of this, I want it to be over. They really have mentioned how many different rallies they've been to for multiple candidates. So you really get a sense that people take their responsibility here seriously.
Turnout, of course, is going to be a huge factor in who wins and who doesn't and by what the margins are. I saw a recent poll that said 65% of people in Iowa definitely want to attend a caucus, and about another 35% said they probably would. Is that the sense you're getting?
That absolutely is, especially at the rallies that I'm going to. The one concern that we do have here is that we're due to get a snowstorm, possibly coming in right about the time the caucuses would start on Monday night. And that could have a huge impact on, you know, caucus turnout and all of that. People here are saying that that may impact the Donald Trump supporters, who tend to be people who haven't attended a caucus before, and that it may favor Ted Cruz, who has a very strong ground game here in Iowa. So we'll see how that all plays out in terms of the weather and turnout.
Well, a huge snowstorm can definitely change things, as we know here in Washington. Iowa is probably a little better prepared for it, but turnout is key. And like you say, a lot of first-timers are going to be coming out for Donald Trump, apparently.
Right. There have been a couple of different events, at least that I've been to here, where they're taking down the basics of what happens in a caucus for these voters. They're really educating them on exactly what they need to do, when they need to show up, how it all works, how long the time commitment is. Because, you know, there's a lot of interest from new caucus goers here.
Now, for the Republicans, essentially, they're filling out a ballot.
And
the Democrats actually do a different process.
Right. So the Republicans, it's secret, so you don't know who everyone, who your neighbors and everyone else at the caucus is voting for. And it's different for the Democrats. They actually have to vote with their body. They have to stand in the corner that belongs to their candidate of choice. And if they can't muster enough bodies for that candidate, then they start all over again and reshuffle it up and see who wins at that point.
Stay warm out there in Iowa. Good luck if the snowstorm, in fact, does hit. Our vote is always with Catherine Gibson. You can write her in, I think.
That would be fine with me.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Well, time for us now to check out trending stories online. And for that, International Edition's social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, is right here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What are we talking about today?
I have an exciting story. So it's about Google and also about making a quick buck or 12,000 bucks.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the story. The internet search engine company lost ownership of its domain for 1 minute last year. And during that 1 minute, a man named Sanmei Ved bought the domain google.com.
And Google tried to buy it back, of course.
Absolutely. The company tried to pay the man about $6,000, but when he said the money will be given to charity, Google actually doubled the donation. The amount of the money was decided because Google spelt numerically is $6,006.13. And the best part is, Ved bought the domain for a grand total of $12.
Well, I'd say that was a pretty wise purchase. What's the public reaction like to this story?
Jim, some people took it a bit more seriously than others. One reader on the ABC News article wrote, "This story is ridiculous on 10 levels. For starters, how could anyone at Google be stupid enough to allow the registration to lapse? Second, given the value of that domain name is $6,000, would be a pathetically low offer. I don't believe this story at all." Now, that reply generated many other replies. One of them reads like this. "Well, he essentially rented it for 1 minute. $6,000 for a minute of the Google name sounds legit." That general sentiment is quite positive. Basically, people are saying that that's pretty cool for everyone involved. One person wrote, "Nice to see someone can still be good-natured about a mistake. And good for Google for doubling the charity donation." Another person wrote, "Classy all around." I think many people agree that investing $12 to rake in more than $12,000 is a pretty sound investment. Jim?
Yes, I would take that one. Indeed. A lot better than the global stock market, especially now. Well, thanks for being here, G. You can follow both of us on Twitter. She is at G. Abby Lee. I'm at VOA Stevenson. And our program account is at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. While most political observers are closely watching Iowa, many in Congress are looking at Iran. We now do the same with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
You know, Jim, the Iran nuclear deal continues to animate our lawmakers. I was sitting at the Senate late last week, and five Democrats came to the floor. And they took control of the floor for an hour to talk about this deal. That followed a news conference by five Republicans called to denounce the deal. This is something that lawmakers are paying attention to. And among the Democrats, they point out that since the deal was implemented, that Iran has shipped out tons and tons of uranium that could otherwise be enriched to weapons grade, that Iran has filled its plutonium reactor with concrete so that it can't be used anymore, and that a number of Americans that have been held by Iran for years have been let go. And they say that, of course, there is a great need for vigilance and that nothing can be taken for granted, but that positive results are flowing from this deal. From the perspective of Republicans, this is all a huge mistake. They say that any compliance that Iran is showing is simply an illusion. They can go back on their word. They can have secret programs. And that with this windfall, with the relaxing of sanctions, with all the frozen assets that are now unfrozen, that Iran will have billions and billions of dollars to put to nefarious purposes across the Middle East. And this is something that lawmakers are very passionate about.
And the Republicans also can make the argument that, hey, Iran is still doing things that we don't particularly care for. Apparently, some sort of missile was fired near a U.S. vessel in the area. And we also had reports of a drone snapping photographs of a U.S. aircraft carrier. So Iran certainly is giving lawmakers something to think about anyway.
Iranian provocations seem to fall into two groups. One group is sort of the big things, the ballistic missile tests, mm-hmm. which are in violation of UN resolutions. And these are things for which Iran can be sanctioned independent of the nuclear deal. And in fact, after the most recent missile test, President Obama, while hailing the accord and the implementation of the accord, at the very same news event said that additional sanctions were being put on Iran for this missile test. So there are the sort of big provocations. But then it also seems that Tehran likes to do smaller things that are of, I don't know what use they are to Tehran, but they certainly annoy the powers that be here right. in Washington. Iran took in a couple dozen U.S. sailors hours before President Obama was to deliver his State of the Union address. And for critics of the Iran deal, that was exquisite timing. I mean, here you have President Obama coming to give his annual address. It's the highlight, arguably, of the congressional year. It's sort of like Congress's version of the prom. And you have the president ready to defend the deal before Congress. And what does Iran do? It hours before, they grab a couple dozen of our sailors. Now, it does turn out that it does appear likely that those sailors did stray into Iranian waters. There may have been some mechanical malfunction. And in fact, Iran turned them loose the very next day. Nevertheless, these are things that are not forgotten in Washington and on Capitol Hill among Republicans especially.
We look forward to seeing what happens. Michael Bowman is always on his best behavior, no matter what Iran is doing. Thanks so much for stopping by, Michael.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
British poet Sarah Howe is the latest winner of the prestigious T.S. Eliot Prize. That's considered the top award for poetry in the United Kingdom. It is the first time the writer of a debut collection has won the award. Born in Hong Kong to a Chinese mother and a British father, Howe spent her early childhood in the former British colony before moving to England. Her book, Poems, Loop of Jade, explores her dual heritage. The 32-year-old Howe is now on a writing fellowship at Harvard University. International Edition's Sarah Williams asked Howe to describe her identity as a child of two cultures.
I think it's been a fascination there right from the very start of my writing life. In fact, I think it did have something to do with why I needed to write poems in the first place. I needed to grapple with those two sides of my being. And because I'd grown up in England from when I was quite small, we moved from Hong Kong when I was 7, I felt like there was always this other side of myself that I had never quite explored or got in touch with. And for me, poems became the way of doing that.
Now, your mother is Chinese. Is she from mainland China or from Hong Kong?
She was born in mainland China. So she was born in Guangdong province. We think probably in the capital city of that province, Guangzhou, though we don't really know. Her early history is a little bit blurry. The only things that she knows were told to her by her adoptive mother. And some of those details are a little bit confused or even contradictory, but we think that she was probably given up or abandoned as a baby by her natural family. And then this woman took her in, and this was all happening in 1948-49. And at that point, her adoptive Chinese mother took her across to Hong Kong Island because, well, obviously the communist revolution was kicking off exactly then. So I think they were just part of a flood of people who were moving over to Hong Kong at that point. And then she lived in Hong Kong for the rest of her life until our family upped sticks for England.
And how has that background of your mother impacted your poetry? Because your work is called Loop of Jade, which is a lovely sort of Asian atmosphere to it.
Yeah, I suppose I was a little bit wary when we were trying to think of a title for the book. My editor and I, we kept circling back to this phrase, Loop of Jade, which is the title of one of the poems. And I thought, can I possibly call a book about my Chinese heritage something that has the word jade in the title? And yet we sort of couldn't escape it because this idea was such a perfect one for what the book does. So the Loop of Jade in question is actually a baby's bracelet, which my adoptive Chinese grandmother bought for me and had blessed at the temple when I was born. And the idea is that these bracelets, and for me, I think this idea really expressed something about my line of Chinese inheritance, that I was searching for a sort of continuity with the past, but one that was inevitably broken and ruptured because there's a point beyond which I just can't go back.
Sarah Howe, the winner of Britain's T.S. Eliot Prize for Poetry. She has been a frequent visitor to Hong Kong in recent years and completed her book there. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
R&B and hip-hop star Rihanna has released her long-awaited album, Anti. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the album and why it took so long to release and what fans can look forward to from Rihanna.
Rihanna's long-awaited album, Anti, is finally out. VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee is here. Shauna, first of all, let's start off. Why'd this take so long to get this album done?
I wish I could answer that question for you. I don't know. We never got a clear answer from Rihanna or anyone in her camp. The only thing that I can assume based on what I've been reading over the last year is that Rihanna wanted to take her time to create what she was calling a classic album, one that would withstand the test of time. And so I think anytime you go into the studio or you begin a creative project with that in mind, you have to take a little more time than normal. I think she knows very well how to bang out what they call a radio hit, something that she can release. It'll go straight to the charts. Everybody will love it for about 6 or 7 months, and then she'll release another one that will replace that. This album is nothing like what we have heard from her in the past. And so I imagine that is a big part of it. Also, she has done something very interesting in terms of releasing this album. I know we talked a while ago about this deal that she signed with Samsung, and there were no real details at that time, but we know now that she worked with Samsung to create this website called Anti-Diary, and so they have all of these virtual rooms that over the last few months you had to go through to get codes, and then the last room would give you a code in which you could use to download the entire album for free. So I imagine that may have also been why it took a little longer than anticipated to release the album.
Going to make you work for it to get to all the cuts. Have you heard any of the cuts on this album?
I've not heard the whole thing because I don't have the code, but I've been able to listen to, I think I heard about 7 or 8 cuts. Interesting, she released 3 songs last year. She released American Oxygen, 4 or 5 Seconds. That was the one with Paul McCartney and Kanye West. Be Better Have My Money. We all assumed those songs would be on the album. They are not. So these are all new songs. I heard the first single, which is Work with Drake. That was released on Wednesday. I've heard a couple of other ones. A lot of ballads, kind of slow and mid-tempo cuts on this album versus what we're used to. She's
no EDM, electronic dance music.
Right. She's well known for EDM. She's well known for her reggae-influenced cuts or her hip-hop-inspired cuts. They're there, but not to the degree that we've known and heard in the past.
Now, can people look to hear Rihanna on the Soul Lounge?
Well, we will be playing that one cut, Work, this week, absolutely. And as the albums are released, you know, we have to play by the rules here. So as the label releases the songs, of course, I'll be playing each and every one of them that I get my hands on.
All right. Well, if you would like to send a tweet to Shauna, she is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also find her at the Soul Lounge. That's on our website, voanews.com. And you can also hit us up. We are at @VOA_IE.
Well, while we anticipate listening to more Rihanna, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com, and we invite you to follow our Twitter stream at @VOA_IE. Our engineer is Daryl Smith, our director, Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thanks so much for letting us be a part of your day. Come back and visit again and have a great one.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
January 20th is a red-letter day for the students and teachers of Bachchan University, situated not far from the town of Charsada in Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. The students, personnel, and indeed much of the Charsada district had planned an observance of the 28th death day of Khan Abdul Ghaffar Khan, also known as Bachchan, after whom the university had been named. Much like his close friend Mahatma Gandhi, Bachchan was a pacifist whose political activism for independence from British rule was nonviolent. He was a Pashtun, a leader of his people, and a devout Muslim. Throughout his life, he worked to establish schools, which put him in opposition to village mullahs, who understood that an educated person is difficult to control. Indeed, violent extremists in the region had made it a point to destroy education. They have burned down schools, gunned down students in classrooms, forbade girls from attaining even basic education, and thrown acid in the faces of those that defied them. This January 20th, armed militants crept through the morning fog and climbed over the walls enclosing Bachchan University campus. Screaming, "Allahu Akbar," they ran through the school, shooting students and staff alike. By noon, at least 20 innocents and 4 murderers lay dead in the halls of the university that had been established to reflect Bachchan's message of peace and universal brotherhood. The United States condemns this appalling attack. The blatant disregard for human life displayed by these attackers is intolerable, said U.S. Ambassador to Pakistan David Hale. It stands in stark opposition to the desires of the Pakistani people to create a secure, stable, and prosperous country based on respect for all. We offer our deepest condolences to the victims and their families during this time of grief. Those who would attempt to justify such murderous actions should remember the words of Bachchan: "Hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. Hatred paralyzes life. Love releases it. Hatred confuses life. Love harmonizes it. Hatred darkens life. Love illumines it."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.